Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Sherry Thomas, author of the new novel, Miss Moriarty, I Presume, the sixth novel in the Lady Sherlock mystery series. Sherry, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new novel, Miss Moriarty, I Presume, how would you describe the novel? And also, how would you describe your Lady Sherlock mystery series? Sorry.
Not a problem. You all right?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Okay. Talking too much also would also make me cough from time to time. So the Lady Sherlock series is a historical mystery series that has for its central conceit the question that what if the fictional Sherlock Holmes, his adventures and memoirs were actually inspired by the life and deeds of a woman, a Victorian woman named Sherlock Holmes. So we asked that question, and everything that followed through was kind of the what was for me the logical outcome of asking that basic question. What if someone with the mind and the temperament of Sherlock Holmes was actually born a woman in the time he lived? And we've had, five books, and book six has just come out. I don't know much about any story or series going into the writing of it, kind of like I discovered as I write it. But one thing I did want to know was that I didn't want to get rid of my Moriarty too early. So to that end, I didn't even bring Moriarty on screen too early. So this is the first time he comes on stage as a major character. But I also didn't want him to bring him in immediately as a challenger to Sherlock Holmes, as a obvious adversary. The entire series has taken place against the backdrop of the shadowy Moriarty and his organization, but I didn't want the episode to be too open, and so I thought, oh, it'll be fun if he actually came as a potential client, someone who, you know, like anyone else, comes to Sherlock Holmes, aka Sherlock Holmes, looking for help, and his problem was that he's not sure what's going on with his daughter, who lives in a remote remote community of occult practitioners, and he wants Charlotte to go find out what's happened to his daughter. And Charlotte and company are like, well, this is problematic for us on many different levels, because they do not know whether there is a Miss Moriarty, whether there she has any problems, or whether this is a ruse on Moriarty's part, a nefarious ruse. So this is just a interesting adventure / mystery to that end, for them to find out what's the truth on every front.
Well, you mentioned how this is kind of a retake of the Sherlock Holmes mysteries as Sherlock as a woman. Do you remember the original impetus that led you to writing the first Lady Sherlock mystery?
Yes. I first wanted to write a Sherlock Holmes, to write some work in the Sherlock Holmes prestige, in the expanded universe where, you know, other people take up the character Sherlock Holmes and do what they can with it. I first wanted to write my own Sherlock Holmes story when I read Laurie R. Keene's Beekeeper's Apprentice, the first book in her Mary Russell Sherlock Holmes series. And I thought in that series, she gave Sherlock Holmes a young female partner with a mind and a temperament, you know, equal to his own. And I thought that was such an interesting and refreshing take on the old canon. And I thought, oh, I'm enough to do something like this. But at the time, I hadn't written the mystery yet, and I wasn't sure I could do it. And also I was busy. I just had my, I just became a published writer in historical romance, and I was going to grad school at the same time. So that, you know, that just sat for a while until BBC Sherlock came along. And I thought the first couple of seasons really had a whole lot of creative energy in them. And they were a fantastic take on the old canon. And by the time I was also more ready to take out writing mysteries, and I thought, okay, what else can I bring to this that's new? So BBC and CBS both already had modern Sherlocks, and CBS Elementary has Watson as woman. So I thought the only thing logical left to do is seek to ask the question, okay, what would happen if we make Sherlock Holmes a woman, you know, the character, original character, a woman? And I had first wanted to be contemporary YA, but my YA editor said she didn't think mystery sold to YA. So then when I thought I'll pitch this to my adult publisher, then it became very obvious it has to be historical and take place in the same era as original Sherlock Holmes. Partly because I've been writing other books in that era and also familiar with that era, and added the question of what, you know, what would Sherlock Holmes do if he was born a woman, and growing up in that era became that much more interesting because of all the constraints he would have faced.
And do you remember the first time that you read the original Sherlock Holmes stories?
I cannot remember exactly whether I first saw him on TV or read the original books. It happened at around the same time. It was the mid-80s in China, and China Central Television had just purchased some programming from the BBC. And so I didn't realize until many years later that what I was watching on TV, the Sherlock Holmes series with Jeremy Brett, was like very new just then. I thought it must be from the 70s or 60s, but no, it was like from the early 80s. And I was watching it in the mid-80s, 85 or 86, around that time. And also around that time was when my grandfather borrowed some translated Adventures Sherlock Holmes, the old stories, from his from the library at the medical college where he was a professor. And I had read those. So I cannot remember what came first, but it was all good. I loved everything, you know, Sherlock Holmes at that time.
And so how does your Charlotte Holmes differ from the original Sherlock Holmes?
Interesting. I think her mind, her observational powers, and the way her mind works is very much the same. But I gave her a completely different appearance. I, at first, made her, like, look more or less what you would think Jeremy Brett would look like. And then I wrote about a page and half of it, and I was bored. And I was like, no, this is no fun. So I turned her the complete physical opposite. She became, she became blonde and, you know, pleasantly plump instead of, like, you know, like the tall and lean kind of a character. And she has this very innocent, sweet-looking face, a big white eyes, like basically, and an hourglass figure. So people who look at her, the first thing they would think about is never, wow, there's a, you know, a razor sharp line there. So it's always something else. And then to find out that she, you know, is this basically terrifying observer who knows everything about you, you know, even all the things you don't want to be known from a single glance. And I also have thought to myself, because I gave her a family, but we're never quite sure what kind of family upbringing Sherlock Holmes had in the original, whatever people deduce about him would, like, kind of like from how he conducted himself, that they guessed that he was either upper gentry or lower aristocracy and all that. So I took that and kind of added a Jane Austen element to it. So I was like, poor daughters, impoverished, you know, lowest level of aristocracy, the father's a baronet, and like the father's kind of like unreliable, and the mother's also kind of unreliable. So kind of like, but she had one very good sister who looked after her and who both admires and shelters her. At the same time, she's a young, Charlotte Holmes is the youngest child. So I kind of wonder how she would have grown up Would that have made her a little milder? Would that have made her a little more empathetic? Would that have made her, you know, more aware of what other people face, because she has to face some of the things that Sherlock Holmes never did.
So are you working on another Lady Sherlock novel now?
I am. I am working on the seventh one in the series. People keep asking me, is this the last one? I was like, no, I don't think so. Yeah, and I don't think the seventh is the last one either.
And have you sat down? I think you said earlier you didn't really plan the series. Have you sat down at this point and thought about the series and where it's going and how many you might be writing?
I always thought I would like to write at least 10 books in the series, or at least I felt, even before I started, even before I knew anything about, I felt 10 to 12 books seemed like a large whole length for a book with a larger story arc. Partly because, maybe because I am a fan of Louise Penny's Inspector Gamache series, and the first major story arc in that series resolved in about 10 or 11 books. So I always thought, yeah, that seems like the way to go. And mostly the way my stories string together is in the writing of each installment. I try not to say too much about what each character is or isn't beyond what's necessary for the current story. And so that as each story adds on, we can discover more about their past and more about what could be happening to them now. So it's actually built brick by brick. But I have a general feeling of what should be there and what doesn't need to be there. So it's kind of, yes, yeah, we're driving in the dark, but we have GPS.
So you talked about growing up in China and reading the original Sherlock Holmes stories in Chinese. I'm curious, what was your initial writing journey that led you to writing and getting your first novel published? Because obviously you're writing in English and you're being published by American publishers. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led you to writing?
Yes, what led me to writing was a singular event. Basically, the longer it happened, the more improbable and absolutely crazy it seems in retrospect. But basically, I think the last time I thought seriously of being a writer, and you know, I'll tell you what it was. I was in fifth or sixth grade, and I thought maybe I would like to be a writer of children's literature. You know, basically what I was reading at the time, children's literature. And I'm sure that lasted very long, because I was also thinking of becoming an astrophysics physicist at the time. And it turned out I didn't like physics as much as I thought I would. so none of it was very serious. I was just a good student without a particular vision of what I would become. And
what's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
And then what ended up happening was I became a stay-at-home mother almost as soon as I graduated from college. And when my firstborn was 1.5, I took him to the library and got a book that by a historical romance author that I had read and enjoyed many times before. And on that day, however, the book disagreed with me violently. By the time my husband came home, I read it during my son's nap time. By the time my husband came home, I was, you know, my mind was set. I said to him, "Hey, you know, this book, I really hated it, but it's still a New York Times bestseller. I wonder if I could just sit at home and write books and make some money. That way we don't have to, you know, find additional childcare, and I don't have to get a wardrobe and no go work as a bank teller in the bank, because my undergrad major was economics and you can't really do anything with economics. Major. It was always intended for grad school, and you know, with a little kid at home, I wasn't going to grad school anytime soon. He didn't say anything in opposition. He's just like, "Sure, if you want to do it, go ahead." And so, like I said, the longer it recedes in the past, the more improbable it became that your life just changed in one afternoon. And I actually am not a very persistent person normally. Usually I'll start something and then just drop it if I don't like it. and I picked this up and I stuck it with it for 8 years before I got my first New York publishing contract. This was in the Jurassic era before self-publication was a viable option. So it took 8 years for me to get my first publishing contract. And then after that, it just seemed like, okay, I better get another contract since this job seems pretty good. Okay.
So I'm curious, how long was it after you had that epiphany that afternoon in the library and told your husband, how long after that before you sat down to try to write a novel?
Oh, basically like immediately the next day or something like that. Immediately I started researching. I started, because I was going to write a historical romance. I thought I read so many of them in my adolescence. I thought, you know, that was what I best suited to writing. And it turned out I was right in that regard. At least I knew enough to write a proper one. But again, it took me 8 years to learn to teach myself how to write a story that would get published. And even when I did get published, it was because I was lucky enough to figure out how to revise one particular book. Not because I actually learned how to write romance per se. Like, I had great trouble with the subsequent three books that my editor basically had to, like, you know, just say, "No, you can't do this. You have to do this." And it was only after that, I think, I finally got, you know, a proper understanding of story structure. Even though at the time I may not have even known to call his word to finally get an idea. Okay, so this much change happened, this kind of dramatic change, you know, not just like take one issue and keep going with it. You know, the substance of the story has to change. The conflict has to escalate, all that good stuff.
And so I'm curious about that 8-year period. What were you learning during that period, and what kept you going? I mean, you said that normally if you pursue something and you're not, you know, if you don't like it, you just drop it. What kept you going? Because that's kind of a amazing thing to suddenly just announce one day or decide, wow, I could write better than this novelist that I've read before, who's on the New York Times bestseller list. And then you spend 8 years. What were you doing during that time in terms of teaching yourself?
Well, one thing was that I had another child also during that time. So I was also busy raising children, and I was mostly writing in my spare time, such as it could be scraped when you were a stay-at-home mother with young children. And I guess I must have been really having fun writing those stories, because otherwise, why would I persist, right? It's been so long that I'm a published writer and writing is a job, and you is something you need to do. You have sometimes have to push yourself through. I don't think I had any of that. Really, in a way, ignorance was a bliss. I didn't know like there was flaws in my story structure. I didn't know there was things I could have done much, much better. I just sat down and came up with words and voila, I called it a day. And it was good. And I enjoyed myself and I wanted to keep doing it. So when I told my husband I wanted to do it, it was because I wanted to make some money. But then I decided I want to make money doing this. And then I kind of fell in love with writing stories. So I always said that this is kind of like, you know, the historical romance trope, the arranged marriage, you know, you fall in love later.
So what writing advice would you offer for those who are working on their own stories and novels, given what you just told us about that 8-year journey? And now, and as you mentioned, the feedback that you got on your next 4 novels from your editor, given the time that you're at now with having the successful mystery series, as well as historical romances that you have had published, what writing advice would you offer?
It's hard to say because writing advice, how people write is such a individual thing. How people not only write, how they work, how they structure their working life for creatives. It's such a individual thing. And someone like me, if I have trouble writing, I go read. Whereas other people, if they do not read other people's fictional output when they are drafting. So it's really hard to give like generic advice.
So I'm
just gonna have to say what worked well for me. What worked well for me has been to finally learn story structure because my strength was in conflict and not plotting. So when I finally figure out, you know, how the plot needed to move in combination with conflict, that's when it became much easier. That's when I no longer needed to throw away whole drafts of novels and start from scratch. And another is for people to basically become confident in themselves. I feel like a lot of times writers suffer simply because they're not confident in their own process. My process is messy, but I'm okay with it. It is what it is. I do not have story vision to know what it is from the beginning, everything from the beginning. So I have to write, you know, several exploratory drafts to reach the end. And then I have to bulk this draft up. And that's just my process. It's not good, but it works. And I don't angst about it. I think a lot of times people angst over their process because they want to have somebody else's process. They want to write better. They want to write with less struggle. Whereas, you know, if they just use their process and they just go through the same speed and struggle, they could at least come up with like regular output and don't have to relearn whole processes at the same time. Just those two. And of course, I always tell people to read as much of the best stuff in their genre as they can, because even if you're not going to ever write like that, you at least have somewhere to aim, have a higher place to aim.
Well, what novels have you read recently that you enjoyed?
Because the seventh Lady Sherlock book, since I don't know what's going to happen in each one, I only have a very general outline or premise or, you know, location sometimes when I start. So this one, all I knew was for the next Lady Sherlock, not this one coming out, but I'm working on now. I just know I wanted to take place on a steamer or like a steamship of some kind, a yacht or a steamship of some kind. And that is it. Like, not a terribly good way to start, because, you know, except for your setting, you don't know anything else. So I wrote a 20,000, 30,000 word draft and realized there are so many things I want to change about what choices I'd made. So it was time to stop. So then I went and read Agatha Christie's Death on an Isle, which is a story that takes place on a boat, more or less. And I was just, it's been a while since I read Agatha Christie, and I think the last few I've read of hers were like what she wrote in her old age, left behind for to publish posthumously. So to go back to Agatha Christie at her prime, it's like, wow, what a jolt. She was so good at what she did. Everything was so economic. All the threads were woven together so beautifully. And so I enjoyed it a lot. And so now I, have something to aim for in terms of writing my own story about.
Well, you mentioned that you wrote historical romances and now you've written, you're working on the seventh novel in this mystery series, which is a historical mystery series, given that it's set during the original time of Sherlock Holmes. I'm curious, have you thought ahead in terms of ideas for contemporary mysteries or thrillers?
Sure. I have. I
not that there's anything wrong with historical mysteries.
No, there's anything wrong with it. See, the one main thing I love about historical writing in the historic writing mysteries in the historical era is that I don't have to know any modern day crime detection technology.
True.
I don't have to know how police departments actually work. I don't have to know anything about cell phones and cell phone tracking. I don't have to know anything, and I don't have to come up with an environment where I artificially take all this. I don't have to know anything about fingerprinting technology. I don't have to know any of those things except how to whatever basic chemistry that they had at the time to detect poison and to know how long body takes to decompose, to determine a time of death and stuff like that. So that's one thing that actually that's a large thing that stand in my way of perhaps writing anything set in the contemporary era. Whereas I have no such complexions about writing an occasional contemporary romance because there's not that big technical leap.
Well, where can people find you online if they'd like to learn more about you and your novels?
They can find me. My website is sherrythomas.com. My Facebook is Author Sherry Thomas. I'm just at Sherry Thomas on Twitter. And Instagram, I hardly ever update. I actually don't update much in any of my social media. It's just there as like another email account or something in case people on the platform wish to contact me. But my Instagram is at Writer Sherry Thomas. So I hope people are not looking for a very beautiful curated social media presence.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Sherry Thomas, author of the new novel, Miss Moriarty, I presume, the sixth novel in the Lady Sherlock mystery series. The novel is available now, so go buy a copy. And Sherry, thanks for doing this interview.
Thank you so much, Jeff. Thank you for having me. I had a lovely time.
Great. Wonderful.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.